All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to a special episode of the Knights Cast, in which we are handing out honors for the best of and the not so best of the first season of House of the Dragon. That's right. Round of applause. It is time for the first annual The Hottest Deeds. So, but before we get to the fun stuff, we are just going to kind of, three of us are going to talk about our overall impressions of season one of House of the Dragon. Couple things maybe that worked and a couple things maybe that didn't, but we're just going to have fun with it. So I'm Samantha, contributor to Watchers on the Wall, and you can find me on Twitter at the Sansa Snark. And I'm joined today by Petra. Hi, Petra.
Hi, Sam. My name is Petra Halber, and you can follow me on Twitter at PL Halber.
And we are also joined by Vanessa. Hi, Vanessa.
Hey, Sam. I'm Vanessa Kennedy, also a contributor at Watchers on the Wall, and you can follow me on Twitter at BK Cole Artist.
So a lot, there's a lot we could talk about as far as like a season review here. And a lot has been said about it already, but personally, I'm going to start off with saying I can't give enough praise to Ryan Condal and Miguel Sapochnik, not just for doing what feels like a very faithful book adaptation, which in itself is saying something, because Fire and Blood, if you haven't read it, spoilers ahead, by the way, it's presented as a history textbook. It's not, there's a lot of facts in there, but even then, a lot of the facts are in dispute. So really just taking the skeleton of that and fleshing it out the way that they did was really, really, I think it was a tall order. And I think they more than met the challenge in doing that. And I think that it really truly made the show stand on its own. Like it was not, I mean, there probably are a fair amount of people who would tell you, yeah, I'm watching this because it's, you know, similar to Game of Thrones or whatever, or part of that whole universe. But I think it truly made the show stand on its own and didn't just ride the coattails of Game of Thrones. It was its own thing, and it was really, I think, beautifully well done. There were no Starks. There were no heroic Jon Snows or Robb Starks or whatever. Not yet. There was no sprawl to the story, really, because it's mostly limited to, like, you know, King's Landing, Dragonstone, Driftmark. I feel like a lot of the fan favorite elements of Game of Thrones were not present here. And I think it avoided a good amount of mistakes, maybe, that Game of Thrones made, especially in later seasons. So I thought it was fantastic overall.
I agree. I was not sure how I was going to feel about this show. Season 8 really kind of soured me on the whole thing. And knowing, because I wasn't a huge fan of reading The Dance of the Dragons in Fire and Blood. And I just didn't know that I was going to get really all that invested. And knowing how the story ends, I won't spoil, but I felt like it was going to be really hard to get attached to anybody. And I don't know. But they definitely pleasantly surprised me. I find myself actually rooting for people that I didn't expect to. And I know there, like, Daemon Targaryen had a lot of fans just from, you know, reading the story, but I was not one of them. I just like, he's fine, whatever. But Matt Smith's portrayal has just totally gotten me on board. He's just so charismatic, and his nonverbal acting has just totally sold it for me. So I'm loving it. I'm excited to see future seasons. I do still have concerns for how they're going to end it, but from what we've seen so far, I feel like they are going to do it in a way that shows great care and concern for the source, and also, you know, maybe infusing with a little bit more weight than what we get in the text. So yeah, I'm very, very pleasantly surprised. And I will say I might end up liking it better than Game of Thrones by the time all is said and done, because as much as I loved Game of Thrones, it really did get soured for me with that last season, so much that I still have not been able to bring myself to rewatch any of it. And that makes me very sad.
Yeah, I've sort of accepted that Game of Thrones is going to be a wound in my heart that never heals. Like Frodo's stab wound from the Ringwraith, like it haunts him for the rest of his life. That's what Game of Thrones is for me now.
That's a very apt comparison.
Thank you. And I was looking forward to House of the Dragon more for the community, for the podcasting and the blogging and the tweeting, and then for the material itself. Because it, similarly, I don't really care about the story, and no one, I had affection for Helena, but she's an extremely minor character in Fire and Blood. So I went in determined to like it for the sake of, you know, wanting to be a part of the discourse. But I was impressed by how the show did get me to care about these people without smoothing their edges too much. I mean, certainly there has been, and we'll talk about them, the adaptational changes to make, or however you want to think of them, changes to lessen their crimes or to provide more context. But for the most part, these are cranky, cranky, entitled people, but I care about them anyways. And this is coming from someone who dropped off of Succession halfway through season two because I couldn't stand these terrible people anymore. But House of the Dragon is still okay with me.
It definitely has made us care about terrible people, yes, like Daemon and Aemond and others. I think one of the reasons why it worked so well for me in terms of, and I think you could maybe make this argument for why it works so well for a lot of people in getting us to care about these characters, is it was the storytelling of the richness of the Targaryen history and cultural practices that we were actually getting to see was so immersive. One of the things I love the most was the fact that, you know, in Game of Thrones, there's only Daenerys. She is literally the last Targaryen. So anything that we know about Valyria, if it's coming from her, it might not be like a complete understanding of the history, because she only had Viserys, she only had her brother to tell her about it, and his views on things were kind of skewed. It was a pale imitation, or it was other people throwing off things in passing. Oh, the Targaryens used to do whatever. So it was kind of like a pale imitation of what the Targaryen culture was all about. And the learning, showing us them learning the High Valyrian, the Dragon Keepers, the Dragon Pit, the lessons in dragon taming. I know we didn't see too much of it, but Rhaenyra and Daemon's wedding, the dragon egg hunting.
I loved it so much.
I wish we would have seen more of it. The dragon egg hunting thing, when Daemon is going searching for dragon eggs, I was blown away by that because it was just so cool to see, like, you know, we see obviously Daenerys, she's gifted with these dragon eggs in Game of Thrones, and then she's put them in the fire and bam, she has dragons. And I'm sure that, you know, there's, as we saw on the show, there's more potentially that goes into it than just putting it in the fire and out pop some dragons. But the hands-on aspect that apparently is an ancient Targaryen practice, or maybe it was just a Daemon thing, I don't know. I'm choosing to think that it was like, this is a long continuation, a long tradition of Targaryens hunting, seeking out the dragon eggs. And the dragons, because they have a relationship with them, don't immediately come after them and rip their heads off. You know, they kind of allow them to do that. That was one layer of just like I said, the richness of Targaryens themselves. And it was really, really cool to see all that. The set design of Dragonstone, don't even get started. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And it really evokes to me this feeling of ancient Valyria. And again, I really feel like so much of it just kept reminding us, like, this is an ancient house. Targaryens have been around for a long time. They have this special power. They're not like everybody else. And I feel like they filled that in for us with all of the aspects of Targaryen culture that they showed us, that they made up or that they took from other sources or whatever. But it was just really, it was so fun and so immersive. And that, I think, is what makes it made me care about the characters so much more, because they felt, I don't know, there was a sense of history behind them. What did y'all think about the time jumps and the using different actors for a couple of the characters?
The time jumps didn't bother me in theory, or rather the time jumps, the transition between actors was not a problem for me. What was a problem now that I look back is the fact that I really don't think episodes 1 through 3 inform the rest of the season. The character conflicts that are introduced in those episodes are not adequately translated to the rest of the episodes. So it felt like...
It didn't bother me too much either. And they definitely let us know. I guess the one thing that is when they like specifically call out, oh, it's been blah, 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 blah. I get that they have to do that, but it takes you out of it a little bit. And, you know, I have some friends that have not read Fire and Blood, and I have a couple of friends that didn't even watch Game of Thrones and they're watching this. And they had some questions or were a little confused by it. I think it's easier if you're familiar with the story to understand what's going on and who's who. But trying to keep track of all of that when you're just brand new to all of it, I think would be a little bit more difficult. But overall, I think it worked. And I understand why they did that, because they wanted to give us some of the backstory, but they clearly said their goal was to end the season with Aemon and Lucerys on the dragons. I think that's, they set that as the end point, and then they worked backward to see where they wanted to start and how they wanted to lay it all out. So that's, you know, I understand why they did it that way. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think, you know, there are some things that could have been fleshed out more, some things that we missed out on that maybe I wish had been included, but I think they did a good job with hitting the most important beats of the characters and story to lead us up to the place where we ended things.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, obviously the time jump didn't necessarily bother me either, because I feel like I wasn't distracted by it. I think because it was only certain characters and everybody else was the same actor, it almost kept me like grounded in the story to because you still have your familiar character, you're still seeing your familiar faces of Viserys or Corlys or Daemon, whatever. But then you have other characters who, oh, that's right, in a previous episode they were younger and now they're older. That must mean the passage of time, you know. It wasn't distracting necessarily. I think maybe if they would have changed more of the cast, then it would have been. The only thing that I didn't like about it was that we had to say goodbye to Emily Carey and Millie Alcock, because they were pretty fantastic in their roles. So yeah, I liked it. That's something else that I think, you know, we've all probably seen discussion about. Although what part of this show has not been discussed on Twitter?
See, this is exactly what I was looking forward to getting back into. This is why I cared about the show to begin with.
I have to agree, Petra. I was looking forward to the show, period, just because if it has to do with Game of Thrones, I will absolutely consume it, with the exception of buying works by certain racist a-holes.
Yeah.
Who shall remain nameless.
She shall remain nameless.
She who shall remain nameless, although everybody knows we're talking about Linda. Anyway. I was going into it excited. I guess a little apprehensive, only because if it bombed, it would have been bad for like the entire... not the entire fandom, but like I feel like it would have been, some people would have been like, oh, see, yeah, like this, you know, this whole story, this whole universe, well, it really isn't that great, because they fucked up the ending of season 8 of the original show, and then they tried to do this prequel and it bombed too, and it's just like and it just felt, you know, then I feel like it all just would have like fizzled out. But the fact that, you know, and it wasn't an intense fear, but there was a little bit of it there. But yeah, it was just, I feel like it was so well done and it was so engaging that it couldn't have been anything other than a success. So I was very happy to see it doing so well, even amongst, you know, the more casual fans. Like my mom and my sister both watched Game of Thrones all the way to the end, and they're fans, you know, but I'm always getting text messages from them at 10:01 on Sunday night where it's like, oh, so-and-so, what was so-and-so's name again? Like, I'll never forget, my sister couldn't remember Thoros's name when we see him again for the first time in season 7 after not having seen him for a while. And she's like, what's Man Bun guy's name again?
My mom calls Rhaenyra Rihanna.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I mean, she is a queen, so.
There are worse mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, they both, my mom and my sister, have absolutely loved it. We talk about it after every episode, and they both had kind of the same reaction to it, which was like, I was gonna watch it because it's a Game of Thrones thing and I liked Game of Thrones, but they weren't really expecting to like it as much or to be engrossed in it as much. And I think it probably shattered a lot of people's expectations, which is a good thing. Definitely a very strong first season. Here's a thorny question. Which had a better season one, Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon?
I'm going to say Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And I think the main reason is because Game of Thrones had the momentum of season one had the momentum of a murder mystery to get people invested.
Yeah.
It's a big sprawling world and it's complicated, but who killed John Arryn is really what gets, let's say, casual viewers engrossed. And ironically, we wouldn't get an answer to that question until the end of season four. But that, I think, did a lot to get the storyline, to get people engrossed in the storyline. And House of the Dragon just never had anything in comparison to that.
It's true. That is a good point. It had a hook like that.
Yeah, I was going to say the same. And it's hard. I wouldn't say it's a top. It's close. It's close for me. I really, really enjoyed this first season. And as far as like production value, I mean, this had such a bigger budget and the technology.
You can't even compare.
So much. Yeah, you can't really compare. So it's unfair to compare it on that merit. But yeah, overall, like story-wise, I would give it to Game of Thrones. One, because it's the closest season to the book. And two, instead of like a really tragic final episode, you have a very triumphant final episode after the tragedy of Ned being executed. You have Rob being crowned king in the north, and you have Daenerys birthing dragons. Like, so you have like the triumphant political situation happening, and then you have like a triumphant magical situation happening, and it just like brings those two key elements of the show together in a wonderful way. So yeah, that's why I would pick it.
Yeah, I think I agree with both of you. And as much as I think that there, you could make a very strong case for House of the Dragon having the stronger first season, I think I agree with you, Vanessa, that it, you know, Game of Thrones had a a heavier lift overall in its story because it was so big and sprawling. And, you know, not that there aren't, you know, other things happening on House of the Dragon, but really it is the conflict between the Greens and the Blacks. And that's kind of it. That's, you know, and it's a smaller story. So they don't have to necessarily, they had higher stakes to set up in the first season of Game of Thrones. And I think they did that exceptionally well. So yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you both that it would be Game of Thrones, but House of the Dragon is a very close second. That being said, we're going to have a little fun with season one of House of the Dragon. And we are going to hand out some honors for the best of and not the best of things about the season. It is time for the first annual Hottesties. You don't like it, Petra, now that you hear it?
Oh, no, I'm just laughing at the absurdity of it. No. I was shaking my head, podcast listeners, but I was doing it with love.
Okay. Should the best of be the Hottesties and the worst of be the Limpesties?
That might be a little too on the nose. Maybe it could be the Shrinkies.
Shrinkities.
The Shrinkities. Oh my God. I think
this is why we do this.
I know, right? I think we might have to do that. The Shrinkies. We'll call them the Shrinkies.
It's perfect.
Okay. It's perfect. Okay. All right. So we have a couple of categories and we're going to be handing out the best of, which are of course the Hottesties. And we're also going to be handing out the not so best of, which are the Shrinkies. Make of that what you will, listeners. But we're going to start with Hottest D for actor. We each came up with up to two. I decided to go rogue and I also did a runner up and an honorable mention. So you guys can feel free to do the same. I'm going off script here. So for me personally, my nominees are Emma Darcy and Olivia Cooke. My runner-up is Patty Considine, especially because of, but not solely confined to season episode 8. And my honorable mention is everybody's favorite asshole, Aemon Targaryen, Ewan Mitchell. He was only in, what, 3 episodes? And I mean, clearly he stole the show for me. So those are my nominees. Petra, who do you have?
So I only prepared 2, but I can improvise 2 others. For me, number 1 is Patty Considine. Mm-hmm. I still feel bad that I don't know how to pronounce his last name. After that, Olivia Cooke, because Alicent is an incredibly difficult character to make sympathetic and nuanced, and she absolutely did. After that, for similar reasons, Matt Smith, I guess my runner-up, or whatever the tier is, because again, Daemon is just such a dislikable character in the book, but he made Daemon charismatic, if not likable. And last place, I'm going to say Ty Tennant for playing Aegon, younger Aegon, because okay. I really miss his performance now, going back and watching clips of him. I think Tom Glenn Carney is doing a great job with older Aegon, but he gave younger Aegon so much charisma that I am really, really going to miss him in the show moving forward.
Just bring him back as Darren.
See, that's, I would not be against that.
They did it in Game of Thrones, so.
Oh, they did, didn't they? Yes, yeah. Precedent.
Yeah, Tom. Yes, I forget the actor's name. I'm terrible, but yeah. This was a tough one for me. But I am going to say my top 2, and it's really going to be 3 because I'm going to say Emily Carey and Olivia Cooke.
See, I was going to say Emma Darcy and Millie Alcock, but
yeah. Because I mean, they both really infused Alicent with that nuance. I think they both did a fantastic job, and they split the season, so I think it's only fair to give them both credit. And then Patty, I have to give it to him because I did not care one bit about Viserys at all. And he made me like fall in love with him and feel like real heartbreak for him and what he's leaving behind. So I just could not give it to Patty. But then my honorable mentions, Millie/Emma, because oh my gosh, like, I'm in love with Rhaenyra. I just am, in a way that I wasn't reading the story. And then of course, Matt as Daemon for all the reasons we've already mentioned.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see, we have, as far as we'll confine it to the top 2, but we do have 2 votes for Olivia Cooke. So I think we're going to have to give it to her. Are we in agreement? Yeah.
I'd say that's fair.
All right, the hottest D for best actor goes to Olivia Cooke for her portrayal as Alicent Hightower. Congratulations, Olivia, from everybody at the hottest D's. Okay, so next category is character. This could be different from your favorite actor. So my choices here were, I do have Alicent. Again, just because, Petra, I think as you said, it's so difficult to make Alicent Hightower a sympathetic figure, and she just, but it worked. She was so engrossing as a character, even if you hate her, even if you sympathize with her. But I just thought her character was wonderful. Daemon, I know I didn't mention Matt Smith is one of my favorite actors, but in the show, but I feel like Daemon was absolutely one of my favorite characters until Aemond came along in episode 7. Aemond is, of course, my runner-up. But Daemon was, he is a very gray character. And I don't think that could have come across better than it did on the screen. He was layered and charismatic and nuanced, but you also, like Matt Smith, would give him just this, like, you could sense that kind of rage that he had, like when he literally tried to kill the messenger at the war in the Stepstones and everything. Yet you can tell that he does have that kind of deep down humanity. I was not expecting to like Daemon as a character as much as I did. And yeah, that is owed to Matt Damon's, or Matt Damon, Matt Smith. I know that's not the first time that mistake has been made.
I've made that mistake myself.
As have I.
So yeah, I know it's not the first time that mistake's been made, but yes, that is owing to Matt Smith's performance, but Damon as a character was just fantastic. So Damon and Alicent are my two votes, with, of course, my runner-up being Amond.
So I'm going to go, I think my qualifications here are going to have more to do with enjoyability than like depth, because I think everyone has got a lot of layers. So for pure enjoyability factor, I'm going to go with Helena, because I wrote a whole video essay on her like over a year ago at this point, about how I wanted them to give her nuance and not just shove her to the side as the dumb fat Targaryen. And so far, I think they've done a really good job at making her like a deeply likable character, like a little bit strange. She likes bugs. She says what's on her mind. We haven't gotten a whole lot of screen time from her, but what we've had has been really great. I am sad that they cast a thin actor to play her, but that's not Fia Sabin's fault. So I'll go with Helena and then Amond, because I decided he would be my favorite character after I saw the trailer, and I haven't changed my mind, and I think I chose well.
Mine are probably obvious. It's Rhaenyra and Daemon. I just can't help it.
Should you. There's no reason to help it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I won't necessarily go into why. I think you guys have probably heard me wax on numerous times already about how much I love both of them and the reasons for that. So, yep, those are my picks.
Cool.
Okay. So then we do have two votes for Damon. Vanessa, that's you and I.
Fair.
Yep.
All right. Well, Damon, you earned it. The hottest D for best character goes to Damon Targaryen. Congratulations, Matt Smith.
He finally
Very appropriate.
finished.
He finally finished. Love it. Okay, our next award is new location in the show. And I guess it could be, you could call it new if maybe it was, even if it was referenced before in Game of Thrones, we just didn't see it, or if we didn't see much of it. But I am going to go with a truly new location, and that was Driftmark. Very, very cool to see that. I am a huge fan of House Valyrian, and I was dying to see High Tide, and they did not disappoint. The Hall of Nine was fantastic. I loved all of Corlys's treasures gathered about. I loved the Driftwood Throne. That was very cool. And yeah, I was looking forward to it, and I was not disappointed. Oh yeah, no, I only came up with one for.
I don't know who's going next.
I can go. We didn't see Storm's End in Game of Thrones, right?
No, I don't think we did. Yeah,
okay.
I don't think we did.
Yeah, so yeah, I'll go with Storm's End, and mostly just because of how it's shot in that finale. Like, not so much set design, but just like the whole like atmosphere surrounding it, the rain, Vhagar's head like coming up over the castle. It was just so perfect. I just, oh my gosh, it was gorgeous. Also, just the huge tower. But I mean, like I said, the whole atmosphere surrounding it was just amazing. So that would be my pick.
I am actually also going to go with Storm's End. I wasn't planning to until Vanessa brought it up. But yeah, that scene is such a little mini horror film.
Yes.
That exactly. It's really evocative. I'll say my second pick is the inexplicable Godswood at the Red Keep, which raises so many questions, but it's pretty. And maybe it's through the tree that Green Seer Laerys is getting his information. So we'll find out.
Interesting. And I like how you dropped in the Laerys as a Green Seer.
I don't actually adhere to that theory, but it just, more patterns in the chaos.
Yeah. I did love Storm's End as well. And I feel like since we spent more time at Driftmark, even if it was only, a couple of episodes, like I said, I'm just a big fan of House Valyrian, and I was very excited to see Driftmark represented. That being said, we have two votes for Storm's End. So congratulations, Storm's End. You have earned the hottest D for a new location this season on House of the Dragon. All right, moving on. Next category we have is set design. And for me, as much as I love Driftmark, there was no contest here. It was Dragonstone. The steam and smoke like coiling up from the floor in different places. The kind of the great room where they had the painted table. It almost looked like a temple. It looked like temple like. You had those kind of ethereal clouds of smoke and steam around the island, especially in a couple of scenes where it was either sunset or sunrise, and the way that the glow of the sun like reflected off of that. No contest. It was definitely Dragonstone for me.
I was going to say the same, and I don't need to get into too many reasons because you said most of them already. I guess the only thing I would add is I love how it seems, I mean, not more like homey, but it's more warm.
Yeah,
it's not, no, it was it's like a cold and desolate place like it was in Game of Thrones. And I, you know, there's probably a reason for that, like the lack of magic or whatever, the lack of an actual Targaryen being installed there. But I agree. It was just beautiful.
All it's the anti-Storm's End.
Yes.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. No, it did. Vanessa did feel more homey. I thought it was just, there was like warmer lighting. And again, you could see with the steam and the smoke coming up, you know, that like, you know, the mountain is hot underneath Dragonstone. It feels like when Stannis is there, and especially when Dany arrives after Stannis is gone in season seven, it feels like a furnace that's gone out. Like everything's cold, like it's just, you know, and it's completely different. I think just a completely different atmosphere in the show. And it's just loved it. Okay. So wait, Petra, I'm sorry.
Petra. The award is going to go to Dragonstone regardless, but I just want to say Viserys's private chamber and his little Valyria set.
Oh yeah.
Wens, because I love it as an idea, as a concept for him to be tinkering away at it for years and years. But also when Rhaenyra and Daemon return after 6 years away, and we saw that there were cobwebs on the Valyrian set, my jaw dropped, hit my chest, and my heart broke. And it takes a lot for a piece of set design to actually evoke that kind of response out of me.
Yeah. And it's telling that that's like one thing in the larger setting of his chambers that evokes such strong emotion, you know?
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So, yeah. All right, well, yeah, sorry. It has to go to Dragonstone receives the hottest D for set design in season one of House of the Dragon. Yay, Dragonstone. All right, next, best costume. I feel like there were a lot of options. Personally, there were a lot of options to choose from. So I came up with a couple, but the two that I'm going to go with, the gown that Rhaenyra is wearing in the throne room when the line of succession for Driftmark is being contested, when it has those like structured shoulders and like the, you know, that was one of my absolute favorites. I will say I just love anything Rhaenys wears, because everything, she wears pants a lot, like she doesn't wear gowns unless it's like a special occasion, like the tourney in the first episode or whatever. But, you know, her stuff, you can tell it's nice, but it's simple. She wears pants and boots a lot. And I'm like, this bitch is always ready to jump on Dragonback if need be. And that's what I love about it. So I did love anything that Rhaenys wore. But I think my other favorite was, just for sheer impact, Rhaenyra's finale look with the cloak and the gown. And when she's like striding into the throne room, she has on that, the gown that has like the sleeves almost look like studded.
I can go back and check.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I really like the androgyny of that costume. Mm-hmm. That was nice.
Yeah. A lot of it evoked like, you know, looked like dragon scales. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number one, just for purely carnal reasons, is Aemon's get up at Storm's End.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's wearing his black leather matrix jacket. Mm-hmm. And he looks so much like an anime character. It's ridiculous, but
especially with the sapphire eye.
It's just the most over-the-top thing ever. And he looks so fucking good in it. Second to that is the gown that Rhaenyra wears when her father names her heir. That like Byzantine-inspired dress with the, I know there's a word for the crown that she's wearing, but that was just gorgeous. And very, very different from any costume that we had seen in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So that's one of my picks as well. It's gorgeous. I can't say enough about it. And then I think my second pick is also Rhaenyra, but her hunting leathers in episode two.
Oh, yeah.
Or no, sorry, episode three. Oh, they were just beautiful. I would love to have that costume and cosplay in it. It's just so pretty. And an honorable mention, the outfits that Jace and Luke are wearing in the finale when they're about to go like send their messages.
Oh, the matching outfits. Like,
the matching with its different colors, but they look so good. It's, I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
No, that's, yeah. Yeah, those are my picks.
Okay. Cool. So I don't think, well, no, we do. We have two votes for Rhaenyra's, we'll call it her coronation gown, which, yes, absolutely mind-blowing. The level of detail, that big heavy necklace thing that they put around her neck too. Yeah, I think it's the clear winner. So, all right, best costume, hottest D for Rhaenyra's coronation gown. Hooray. Okay, now we'll move on to, I don't want to be all negative, so...
Oh, no, we're going for the shrinkies. So I was wiggling my pinky finger.
And I was pointing at something. I was like, what?
Okay. Oh, no, sorry. Sorry, podcast listeners. I was making gestures that you can't see.
Obscene gestures. yes, I mean, you know, not to be too, you know, negative, but we are going to have fun with it. So these are the not so best of awards. These are the shrinkies. So let's start with character. Not so best of. So here are my two. My first is Kristen Cole because I hate him and that's all. And the second one, I feel really bad for what happened with Mysteria because I feel like they didn't know what to do with her. I feel like her story started out really strong and it just really ended up, I feel like they tried to save it in the finale episode. And it just didn't work for me. And I hate to see that happen, but.
I'll go. Kristen Cole, obviously, I can't stand him. And Otto as well, just because I can't stand him either. And
yeah.
But I will say with Kristen, with Otto, you can at least have like somewhat of an understanding of why he is the way he is. Like he has like real rational reasoning behind the things he does. So I guess point in his favor. But Kristen, just because you're angry 20 years later, still about being rejected by Rhaenyra, like, come on, let go of the grudge and quit being such an asshole. Sorry.
Don't ever apologize for explaining yet again why Kristen Cole is an asshole. That's just, yeah.
Oh, and just randomly beating people to death, you know,
yeah.
That too.
Petra?
To be fair, Damon doesn't have any consequences for this either.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But he is a prince, so at least you can understand why he would be able to get away with that. But anyway. Petra? Your two?
So for me, number one is Laris Strong. Okay. Because I thought he was interesting at the beginning and I liked this idea of a disabled man who is living in this able-bodied world and has to find sort of other avenues to achieve power. And I think that's really interesting. And then that just got dropped and he became a kinslayer with almost no provocation. And then he has a foot fetish because his entire identity is caught up in his disability. And that's just lazy writing, 0 out of 10. And then Kristen Cole, because similarly in those first three episodes, even though the fourth episode, I thought he was introduced as an interesting character. And then we jump ahead 10 years and he's just one note grudge that really makes no sense, but that's all he's given.
Yeah. I agree with all of that. And I think what's best to do in this situation is instead of choosing one character for a shrinky, I think we're just going to award shrinkies to them all just to keep things fair.
Works for me.
Okay. I think the only other one we'll touch on as far as the not so best of, quickly we can do adaptive change because I know we talked about a couple, we talked about the prophecy and stuff, but there are a couple other things that I know that people, you know, have had strong opinions about. I will say that for me, the coronation of the dragon pit and not having Aegon presented as a dragon rider, at least not yet, I get that what they were doing with that scene is like, and I saw this somewhere on Twitter, I apologize that I can't remember who I saw post it, but it's all the, you know, the Greens have all the trappings of power. They have Aegon's crown, they have Blackfyre, the sword, but it's really, you know, they're kind of empty gestures. But the Greens have dragons too. So it's not like they're just kind of acting like Targaryens. I mean, they are still Targaryens and they do have dragons. So I'm just like, what, you know, what did it accomplish to not show Aegon as a dragon rider yet? Are they keeping it as a surprise of sorts for season two? Are they not doing it all in keeping with the theme of Aegon being a drunken loser? I mean, it would be a very big change for a significant event that happens later in Fire and Blood. And I don't know how they would, I'm talking about Rook's Rest, which that's all I'll say, but you know, I don't know how they would handle that as a change. I don't know. It just didn't, it was a great scene and it was done really well, but I don't understand, I guess, why they haven't shown Aegon with Sunfire yet. Just me.
I'll go. Mine would be the inclusion of Viserys talking about the prophecy to Alicent and her misinterpreting it as him wanting Aegon to be on the throne, because ultimately it doesn't even matter because they were planning to do it anyway. And so what was the point other than to just make Alicent look more sympathetic again, which is fine, but you know, I appreciate them giving us a more complex character in her, but I also feel like they're taking away her agency as a power player in this whole thing and just leaving it up to mistakes and men kind of plotting behind the scenes behind her back. And I don't like it. I just don't.
Very fair point.
That one was mine as well. The fact that Alicent's motivations are all over the place this season, but specifically having her reconciled with Rhaenyra, apparently deciding that Rhaenyra is not going to kill her children after all. That was her motivating factor. And then it, I guess it just wasn't anymore. And then she had a new motivation, which was prophecy, as her husband explained it. So I don't like it.
I don't disagree with either one of you. It's similarly to the change with Aemon's killing of Luke as to whether or not it was intentional. I feel like I could go either way on this one, because I still think that Alicent, yes, she had reconciled with Rhaenyra, but I feel like it's not as though everybody would have woken up the next morning. If Viserys hadn't died, everybody wouldn't have woken up the next morning and things would have been hunky-dory. It was, I think, represented the potential beginnings of a reconciliation, but nothing was set in stone as far as that one, because there's still a lot of bad blood between the two of them. And I still believe that Alicent hearing it and misinterpreting it could either be looked at as a genuine misinterpretation, but even if it wasn't, and she kind of like willfully misunderstood it, I think the argument could be made that it wasn't necessarily taking away her agency, because willfully misunderstanding it and putting her own son on the throne, she's been wanting to put Aegon on the throne for years. So it's not like all of a sudden Viserys says this and she's like, oh, okay, that's what I'm going to work on now, is getting him on the throne. It was something that she had always wanted, and I think whether or not she realized it, had, you know, always kind of been working toward. And I think that when she heard that, again, she maybe kind of heard what she wanted to, and now she's just gonna, and to anybody else, she's gonna cloak it in, oh, well, these were my husband's dying wishes. Does she actually believe that's what he meant? Maybe not. But I think that it was okay to do it that way. It didn't rile me up. Like, I saw a lot of reactions where people were pissed about it. And
I was riled, Samantha. I tell you, that night I was riled.
Well, I wasn't riled. I don't know. I could see the argument made for that point as well. But because we do have two nominations for the same adaptive change, we will award the Shrinky solely to, let's call it, the big old prophecy misunderstanding in episode 8, at the end of episode 8. So congratulations, I guess, to that scene. You have earned yourself a Shrinky. That's all that we came up with as far as awards, though. There's so much that, you know.
Can we do worst costume just real quick? Should be easy. Sure. One. Kristen's stupid hat, stupid disguise.
Oh my God, so Kristen Cole. Kristen Cole's quote unquote disguise. What was that supposed to be? What was he supposed to be?
He's like cosplaying Rhaenyra in episode 4 when she went out into the streets of King's Landing.
I don't know. It was such a, it was so that stupid. Hat. It was bad. It was a bad hat, but anything that looks stupid on Kristen Cole. Just kidding. Not really. All right. So that wraps up our first annual Hottest D Awards featuring the Shrinkies. We hope everybody enjoyed it. And we know it's going to be a long wait until season 2, but we will do this again after the end of season 2. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next time.